This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. North Carolina State University announced yesterday that students can return in person for the spring semester. The university went online only in late August and has one of the highest case counts per capita in the UNC system. A new study shows that campus reopening is associated with a 3,000 case increase per day in the U.S. So what does NC State's decision mean for students and the surrounding community? Liz Schlemmer is with me. She's WUNC's education reporter. Hey, Liz, welcome back.
Hi, Anita. Glad to be here.
So NC State made this announcement yesterday that students can live in dorms and go to in-person classes in the spring. I know you have been tracking COVID-19 case numbers at all the UNC system schools very carefully. Tell me about what you make of NC State's decision.
Well, I wasn't expecting it, but I wasn't necessarily too surprised either. I've interviewed Chancellor Randy Woodson in the past, and he's been very optimistic about the fact that there was virtually no spread of the coronavirus tied to classrooms, labs, or really instruction. You know, and almost 3% of NC State's student body tested positive for the virus so far. That's the third highest rate in the system. But they say that they've learned lessons from the fall and that they'll do things a little bit differently in the spring. Some of their new measures include, they say they're going to have strong enforcement of community standards, so essentially that students can be disciplined for gathering or throwing parties. They're going to have dorms at single occupancy, and they're going to have more quarantine rooms this time.
But aside from students and the faculty they interact with, students coming back to campus impacts the communities that these universities are in. And there's an interesting study that you just reported on that is quite curious to think about in light of NC State's decision. It says that there are spikes in COVID-19 cases across the country when universities do bring students back on campus. So tell me about this study and some of the findings.
I talked to one of the co-authors of the study, and he told me that what surprised him the most was the scale of the cases associated with college reopenings. The study found that college reopenings in person were associated with, as you said, a 3,000 case increase per day in America. So each day that colleges were reopened, there were about 3,000 more cases at the community level, at the county level. And the co-author's big takeaways from this were that it's important to pay attention to the movement of students, of people from COVID hotspots to places where there hasn't been as much community spread. So one of his pieces of advice was not to send students home when outbreaks occur, you know, when a college town becomes a hotspot, to then not send those students back to their communities and their families. And he also suggested for reopening plans to be really thoughtful about where their students are coming from, so that if a university draws really heavily from states where there has been a lot of community spread recently, to think about that and maybe consider an online option. He was just saying, you know, mobility really matters. The movement of people really matters.
That's interesting to think about in terms of what happened at UNC Chapel Hill earlier this year, the students who came to campus and then were asked to leave suddenly. So there was a lot of mobility there. Interesting to think about. I want to pivot now and talk about other big news in the UNC system. A Board of Governors meeting last week that you reported on introduced a new policy that gives the system president a bigger role in filling chancellor positions. So the old system used to be that the Board of Trustees on a given campus would conduct a search and then submit a list of finalists to the system president, who would then choose a finalist to be voted on by the Board of Governors. Now the president has a much bigger role, and it has been a bit controversial. So talk about this change.
So the new policy is that, you know, like before, there would still be a search committee formed and candidates solicited from across the country, but the president can submit two candidates of his own choice for consideration. And then the local board of trustees, so that is a board that, you know, represents the university that has a chancellor vacancy, that board would have to return at least one of the president's choices back to him as a finalist, along with other finalists, and then he can choose someone for the Board of Governors to vote on. So the concern here is that it could, at the very least, appear that the president of the UNC system has has handpicked someone from the beginning. And there was concern that this might be a deterrent for people who want to apply for chancellorships if it appears that the outcome might be predetermined by the president's choice.
So just to be clear about this, the UNC system president can ask the board of trustees and the committee to review a particular set of candidates. And even if they don't necessarily want the candidate that the president recommended to be the finalist, they are required to include someone that the president wanted in their list of finalists.
At least one person, that's right, in the list of finalists.
What's the rationale behind this change?
Well, it's something that President Peter Hans has asked for, and there are a few reasons. He said that, you know, it will help him to lead the system if he has a little bit more sway, and who else is helping him lead the system at the university level. He's also said that it would help to be able to cultivate talent from within the UNC system. I mean, when there are chancellor openings, people apply from all over the country for these jobs. So he's saying this would help him kind of influence and cultivate talent from those he's already worked with.
Okay. I want to move on to talk a bit about enrollment and tuition and challenges that the UNC system is going to be facing moving forward. There was a lot of concern about enrollment for the fall semester, but in the Board of Governors meeting, they revealed that enrollment actually increased by 1% across the system last year. There was a lot of concern that students wouldn't come back to campus because things would be online and look really different. So were people surprised by these trends that enrollment actually went up?
Well, some of the predictions were certainly that enrollment might go down in the fall because if students, you know, there's such a disruption from the pandemic and students might change their plans or might find that they can't afford to go to school like they had planned. So UNC System President Peter Hans had said this is really an accomplishment for the university, that they had growth. It was mostly in graduate programs. The undergraduate enrollment largely held steady, but he still really counted that as a win. I talked to a couple of experts about this, and they said, you know, it could be because some students had made their plans even before the fall semester started, before the pandemic hit. And at the same time, there's kind of competing trends here that a lot of times during a recession, college enrollment actually goes up because many people want to retrain and be ready for the economy when the recession is over. But at the same time, some people really might be struggling to afford college right now.
But even with enrollment steady, universities are going to be experiencing major budget shortfalls because there's all of that other money aside from tuition that comes from housing and dining and athletics. So talk about what's happening in terms of revenue losses for the UNC system and what we know about what cuts are expected.
We don't know too many specifics yet about what kinds of salary cuts or furloughs might happen. And the reason is that universities are still kind of waiting for help. Universities are waiting for the possibility of federal legislation that might give them aid, you know, like a second CARES Act, which Congress has not passed yet. And they're also waiting on state legislation that would allow them to make salary cuts and layoffs. That legislation has been drafted, so that would allow UNC system schools to make personnel changes. So those are two major sources of funding, right? State appropriations and federal aid. And the other side to this is tuition, and the UNC system is asking universities to freeze tuition. They did this fall, and there's already talk about freezing it for in-state students next year. So if that doesn't change, you know, the only place the money really can come from is the cuts to the budget. We don't know too many specifics yet, but we do know, for example, that at UNC Chapel Hill, they're looking at a loss of $400 million, and that's even before the fall semester began.
We did just get some breaking news that the NC State Director of Athletics posted a message on the school's athletics website Thursday morning saying he was announcing some salary reductions or furloughs throughout the athletic department. So I'm guessing that these are going to be kind of unveiled slowly school by school as various schools prepare for potential changes. Are there any more?
And we've seen some of those cuts to athletic departments already, or salary reductions to athletic departments. So it does seem like they are the first to be hit.
Just as we close out, Liz, moving forward in terms of the COVID-19 dashboard and case counts at various schools throughout the UNC system, is there anything that you are paying attention to moving forward about trends that may affect other schools and how they make decisions similar to NC State's recent decision to reopen in the spring?
Yeah, I've been kind of paying attention to the rates of students who have tested positive. So as a portion of the total student population, UNC Pembroke is getting up there, getting a little bit closer to where NC State was, which of course they went online this fall. And I've also kind of noticed a trend that some of the HBCUs actually have lower percentages of spread among their student population. So I'm going to be looking into that, and I'll have more reporting on that next week.
All right, we will follow that reporting, and everyone else can do so by following Liz Schlemmer. You can find all of her reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Liz, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anita.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.